some point, it's a personal decision for you. Is your end goal in life, do you want to be a partner in a big law firm? Do you want to be a corporate executive, or do you want to do something else? Like, what is your goal? And a lot of it comes down to that.
Hi, everyone. My name is Doreen Benyamin, and this is Before You Take the LSAT. Before You Take the LSAT is a platform for people who are either thinking about law school, in law school, or recently graduated. And it's basically insights into each part of that path. And it's basically what I wish existed when I was in law school or even before. I just think a lot of people who go to law school tend to be type A, and there aren't a lot of great resources for us, for people who want to plan ahead. And so today I'm really lucky I got to talk to Jake again. We spoke 2 years ago last on this channel, and we talked a little bit about his path. I'll share a little bit about that. And today we're gonna talk a little bit more about his path since our last interview. So in our last interview, we spoke about how Jake dropped out of high school at 14. And you had no path at that, no like clear path planned at that point. But by the time you were 20, you were already at Harvard Law School taking your first class. And we talked about that in the previous interview, but you kind of just decided that you wanted to do it, and you figured out the path, and you talked to people who had done it before, and you realized that you just needed to work on your GPA, your LSAT, and just move forward. And so you did that. We also talked about the fact that your pre-law counselor had told you that the highest you should aim for is Northwestern, and you didn't listen to that, which I think is really great advice for people to hear, because a lot of times people feel limited by those types of things. You also spoke about like working at Evisort, which is where we are right now. We're actually at the headquarters for Evisort, and they're based out in San Mateo in Silicon Valley. And this is what he's been doing ever since he graduated from Harvard Law School 2 years ago in 2018. And ever since you graduated from Harvard, you've also been recognized as Forbes 30 Under 30 list with your team, with your co-founders. And you've been backed by people like Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, and Bill Gates, right?
We got Microsoft themselves too. So.
As a client, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so before we dive into career paths and those types of things, can you just talk a little bit about what Evisort is? And I guess also why you chose to do Evisort.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, quick background on what Evisort is. So, when we were in law school, none of us that are on the Evisort team today imagined we'd be doing this today. We went in thinking we'd be lawyers. I may have mentioned this, but I like already knew the firm I wanted to go to because I had read Barbarians at the Gate, which is about private equity.
You never talked about that. That's interesting. Okay.
So, I worked in private equity beforehand. I wanted to go be a private equity lawyer. And so, I was thinking, all right, I'll go to law school, I'll go work for Simpson Thatcher, the law firm that's mentioned there, as a big private equity law firm. They're like pictured in the book. And that was what I expected. What we discovered pretty quickly, and anybody who goes to law school will hear a lot of this, is lawyers come in, they talk about what it's like to be a lawyer. And they'll never say the pay is bad, right? The pay is great, like that's fantastic, especially going to big law. But the challenge that came up over and over again was the work they were doing, they felt often wasn't something that they necessarily enjoyed and needed to be doing. Like, there's a lot of repetition, there's a lot of repetitive work where they're looking at the same documents over and over again, trying to answer the same question over and over again. And maybe it's because we were naive, but the response we had was, like, technology should be helping there. There's technology out there that actually solves for this problem. And so it wasn't that we planned it, but because of what we heard and just as we reacted to what we learned talking to lawyers, we went down this path. So my section mate in law school, Jerry who's our CEO, started researching this path, brought me in, and along with our third co-founder, Amin, who was a data science student at MIT getting his PhD. So he was in their operations research division, exploring how do you create AI to optimize a lot of different processes, at the time focusing on the FDA. And so we banded together and started working on this. And since then, we've built out a platform where our system can actually read contracts, understand what's in them, and track certain metadata and clauses. So for example, it can identify your termination rights, your publicity rights, when your contract expires, and even before that, like when you actually need to give notice to opt out or opt into to the next term. It tracks about 50 different data points across about 200 different contract types. For lawyers and other folks at companies beyond lawyers who actually have to look at contracts, instead of having to read each contract ahead of time, know what you want to track, write it down, enter into Excel spreadsheet or a system, our platform can just automatically read the contracts and ingest them, and you have all that data there for you. So you don't have to worry about making sure that you're tracking when each contract expires, because our system takes care of that for you, as an example. So that's what our platform does today.
That's awesome. So one thing that I didn't mention at the beginning of this interview is that you had And also, so for anybody who missed the first interview, that's kind of where we talked a little bit about the pre-law stuff and during law school. And today we're focusing a little bit more on choosing your career path and what your career path has looked like in the past 2 years, or you've been working on Episode at this point for 4 years. So
it's actually 4 year anniversary since we incorporated was about 4 days ago, so
wow,
December 9th.
That's crazy.
So we obviously worked on it a little bit before then, but our official 4 year birthday.
That's awesome. Happy birthday to you guys.
Thank you.
4 years old, little toddler.
Yep.
So one thing that I wanted to mention is that you had a lot of options. Like you said that you were thinking about Simpson Thacher in private equity. So that was one of the options you had. You also had offers from McKinsey and BCG where you had worked during your first summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if you could walk us through a little bit of that decision, because I think when we originally talked about this 2 years ago, it was so fresh. It'd be interesting to hear what your, how you think about that decision now. Was it really tough for you to be like, I'm going to commit myself fully to a startup? Because everyone, like, I think most people understand the idea that if you choose the startup route, obviously law is like very clear, right? You go to Simpson Thacher, you know, you said yourself, you know exactly how much you're going to make your first year and second year and your seventh year and what that path looks like. You know, you start as an associate and become, you can become a partner. Whereas with the startup, there's a lot of risk of like, I don't know if this is even going to last. Most startups don't make it. So maybe if you could share with us how you thought about that and what factors you were considering when you made your decision.
Yeah, absolutely. So at the time when we talked last, right, our entire team fit around the table that we're sitting at, right? So it was a very, definitely felt like a different decision at the time or different company I was joining at the time.
Yeah.
When I reflect back now, and in the moment you don't realize it, but at the time I was deciding, right, do I keep working at Evisort, do I go and accept an offer and go somewhere else? But I wasn't really deciding that. In a lot of ways, my decision was already made. I was working with people I liked on a problem that we found really, really challenging, right? We're building something that hadn't existed before. We weren't sure it was possible. Can you create this out-of-the-box experience where you're basically giving the most advanced technology to lawyers who may not be familiar with technology at all and letting them use the most powerful technology in their day-to-day? And that was unprecedented. Could it be done? But we were working on a really hard problem. We were working with really fun people, smart people, and hardworking people who were challenging it and thinking the same way. And it was a team of seven at the time. At that point in time, when you're working on something like that with folks who are close friends like that, it was almost, there was no decision in a lot of ways. And when I look back, I would say that, in that you, the default, even though it doesn't seem like that, is actually you're going to keep working on the problem that you all committed to together. So in a lot of ways, it wasn't as much a decision for me. But at the time, obviously, right, the question is, like, it felt like I was giving up McKinsey, it felt like I was giving up BCG, and I was giving up the law firm option. The way it felt to all of us at the time was, yes, we're giving up these certain options,
mm-hmm.
but we think this industry is going to change. We think that the legal world is going through a transformation. We think what we're building is going to exist in 5 years.
Yeah.
We want to be part of it. We want to be the ones to do it. And we could go to a firm, and it would have been a good experience, right? You'd learn a lot. You work with some smart people as well, but it's very different from building the solution yourself to a problem you've identified. And so for us, that was the decision. We were lucky enough to find investors at the time who were then gave us the capital to actually build out our team once we graduated and actually move our team out here to the Bay Area. We were able to then, you know, grow the company to where it is today.
So, I mean, I understand on the one hand, like for you, a lot of the decision was, this is going to happen anyways, but I want to be a part of the like group of people who actually makes this happen. But there's also the very real issue of like, you're in law school. I imagine if you go to Harvard, there's debt. Cause I don't.
Yep,
so
I'm
like,
debt.
Yeah. So when you think
still
of all
pay
of
those bills,
so when you think of all of that, how did the financial aspect factor into your decision-making? Because, you know, I think everyone would probably love to, or a lot of people might love to lean on the side of, I want to be part of making the future or creating the future, but then feel like those very real things like finances and things like that might make them not want to take on the opportunity. It sounded like you guys already had investors at that point and maybe that made you feel more comfortable, but what was how was that? Was that actually what had happened and what made you feel comfortable making that decision?
I feel like I ever watch a celebrity talk and they say, like, follow your dreams. It's like, it's great for Taylor Swift to tell you follow your dreams.
Yeah.
Because, you know, but statistically speaking, right, it's not the case. But I think in this scenario, right, we moved out here. Bay Area is not a cheap place either, I would add. A lot
right.
more expensive than Cambridge was. Cambridge felt expensive.
It's more expensive than New York, too.
At the very least, it's comparable. Like, they're
yeah.
both are just too expensive is where I put it. And so we moved out here, and to be frank, like it was quite hard. Like we stayed. So Jerry is from the area. My co-founder and our CEO stayed by his parents' house for a little bit when we moved out here. We had to sacrifice a lot, obviously. Like there wasn't much money to go around, and obviously it wasn't like living on a big old salary. But again, like a lot of those things, I think weren't. You might feel it in your bank account, but they are not your focus at the time, right? We're building something that was exciting to us, and there were plenty of distractions in the day-to-day. But really, I mean, at the end of the day, it's everyone has their own calculus of how risk-averse are they, especially at law school, right? A lot of people by nature are going to be risk-averse. They want to follow the safest path. Even working a summer in a non-law job is often like something they tell you don't do because that sends red flags.
And you did BCG.
People are by nature risk-averse.
Yeah.
But at some point, it's a personal decision for you of, do you want to, is your end goal in life, do you want to be a partner in a big law firm? Do you want to be a corporate executive, or do you want to do something else? Like, what is your goal? And a lot of it comes down to that. If you want to be a partner in a law firm, you probably shouldn't take the path I took. It's not a good path, I promise you. My path is not leading me to be a partner at a law firm. So if you want to do that, you should not follow my footsteps. If you are focused on, how do I have impact in a certain way that a startup company or, you know, working in a role, whether it's in law or outside of law, in a startup that's, you know, still sort of growing and establishing itself, then, you know, you can consider it. Or if it's, I'm not sure what I want to do. I know law is not where I'm feeling fulfilled, and I want to explore these other areas where I think I will feel more fulfilled, then it might be a viable option. Because the reality is, for, I hope everybody in our team feels this way, is you, when we work on stuff, we work on it because we believe it will have a huge impact. We have companies like Microsoft use our software now. So even like the largest law departments in the world.
That's crazy.
And so, you know, it's cool, right? We're lucky that we have that trust and confidence from them.
Yeah.
But we're lucky to be able to build for an organization like that. And not just that, but also build a product that is used by Microsoft, but used by companies that are like 30-person companies out in Idaho that might have like one lawyer doing all the work, and they get to use the same type of tool. It's a really cool thing to be able to do. And for us, it feels like we're having a really big impact on the legal profession as a whole and the industry of lawyers working in-house. And so for us, that's our reward, right? We get to work on something like that. And every day we can think about, you know, what are we working on? Or in the long term, we can think about what is the impact? If we're successful, what will the world look like with us versus, you know, if we weren't there? I think it comes down to what motivates you.
Yeah.
If some people are motivated by money, some people are motivated by the title, some people are motivated by impact, some people are motivated by their team members. I would say it's usually two out of that list, or maybe a couple other items. Some people need stability. They have a big family they need to support, and they need stability. Once you know that, you can then decide, okay, what is the right outcome that enables that without, you know, creating too much risk. But if you can take risk, you know, great.
When you made this decision about what you wanted to do, it feels like it's for the rest of your life. Well, obviously it's not. But like what you wanted to do straight out of law school, like it kind of does close some doors, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were 23, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, yep. You were even younger when you started at the sort. You were like 21, right? But by the time you graduated and you were making this decision about what you were going to do, you were 23. And I'm just curious, like, I don't know. Did that, sometimes people really identify with their age, or they think like, oh, I'm this age, and maybe probably didn't factor in as much for you if you even like started Harvard that young. But did you feel like you had to reach out to mentors, or like were there, you know, different people that you talked to, or was that something that you considered as you were making your decision? I'm just curious.
I wouldn't say for making the decision.
Okay.
But only a fool goes down the path alone, right? That would be dumb. So obviously we're lucky to have a lot of folks around us who support us and give us advice. Both from like back in the law school days, we had professors we went to, right? There's some professors with different advice. You know, there's a lot more who are in the academic space who maybe will not be as practical on how do you think about a decision like this.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of professors also that are either know more about other areas beyond just the traditional legal path, or who know people who would know more about that, and they can connect you. So we were lucky all the way back in law school to have a lot of folks who helped guide us along the way. And so even then, you know, had a lot of advisors, and since then, it doesn't change, right? It's every part of what's exciting about a startup is, you know, obviously great team members, lucky to work with really, really awesome team members, really impactful work, but also work that changes every day, right? So that means what I do today looks very different than what I did 3 months ago,
yeah.
Looks very different than what I looked 9 months ago, looks even more different than a year ago. And it'll be the same again in 3 months, in 6 months, in 9 months. And that's part of both the thrill and the scary part of working in a startup, right? It's going to be different. But in order to be able to go through that, you want people around you who have gone through that path before, who can tell you how to do it well, and help you not make the same mistakes that other people have made before. And so we try to have people around us, especially, you know, it's different people at different stages, but we try to have people around us who can guide us as we grow and guide us as we are, you know, building out our company and as our role changes every month or every quarter.
How do you find those people? I mean, because a lot of times people might want a mentor but not sure how to find one.
Yeah.
Especially, like, you have to find different people at different stages, right? So
the people that we work with come from a lot of different places. There's people that we met directly, we met through friends, we met through investors, people we reached out to. Probably the like, if I was starting out, right, and I was looking for folks to mentor me, and it's probably just outreach. You have to put yourself out there and take that risk.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be rejected or ignored sometimes. But, you know, sending that cold email, people out there want to help. And so that's a way we got connected to some folks. Since then, as we've grown, we've been lucky to have existing mentors who are able to then connect us to the next, either the next set of people that can be helpful with the problems we're having in that point in time. So now we're lucky to have that, or, you know, we might mention to a friend, hey, I'm struggling with this. You know anybody, right, who can help? But when you're even before that step, right, of knowing, you know, who to ask, figure out who you want to talk to. Who is it that you're trying to get to help you out? Who's your ideal person? And reach out, whether it's on LinkedIn or via email. There's a lot of folks out there, and it's easier than ever to get in touch and actually just ask them, hey, can we – don't put the, can you be my mentor? That's a little bit of a strange ask, but probably more of a, can we jump on a call? I have questions about this. Can I get 30 minutes of your time, right? People out there are generally speaking willing to help, depending on what the challenge is.
Okay, so maybe we could just jump in with the question that someone asked. You didn't have a comp sci background, did you?
I did not. The closest I ever got to that was I may have hacked a Zynga game once in terms of discovering a way to get free loot, but that's a separate story. But I did not have a computer science background. But, I mean, in a...
One of your co-founders, though.
Yeah, so our third co-founder, Amin, he's our CTO and leads our data science team, mm-hmm. which means they're building out the AI that's actually powering our platform. And part of building a startup, right, is, and to be honest, probably any role.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of things you don't know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the fake it till you make it, figure it out on the go. And so there are a lot of things we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Amin comes from a data science background. He wasn't a lawyer. And I came from a law background. I wasn't a data scientist. We both had to learn a lot about each other's work and what it means. I would actually stack him up now against any other lawyer out there.
Wow.
Because I think he's read as many contracts as most
wow.
lawyers.
Makes sense, though.
So it's an open challenge out there. But, you know, we've all had to learn a lot about things that maybe were not in our degrees
yeah.
or professional degrees experience. But that's just, I mean, that's a piece of paper, right? It's once you leave school, what you do is up to you.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, your degree might help you get in certain doors. But once you're in the door, how you perform is
yeah.
100% about what you actually do in that role and how you actually perform there.
Yeah.
So
I could ask you so many questions, but I know we want to keep this like to the point. And so one of the things I'd love to hear from you is if you had like a sibling or a little brother or whatever that was thinking about law school, what advice would you give them? And then someone who's in law school and thinking about their career path, what advice would you give them?
Yeah.
Just because that tends to be our audience, so.
Yeah. So I think for thinking about law school part, there's a lot of folks who have like strong opinions, go, don't go, or here's where you need to go. Everyone talks about you need to have a reason to go to law school, you need all that. 90% of people, I think, in law school have no clue why they're there.
I think that's true.
And everyone writes a personal statement saying they're going to save the world.
Yeah.
But the numbers don't lie that most of them coming out don't go down that route,
yeah,
right?
True.
So it's that part I don't necessarily subscribe to. But what I will say is it's worth knowing what you're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
And that means probably talk to some folks or listen to some folks who have gone through it.
Mm-hmm.
And both decided to be lawyers and decided not to be lawyers, or were lawyers and then left the law. Because even if you might not necessarily resonate with what they found as challenging, or you might say, you know, actually it sounds great with the things that they didn't like, or even maybe I'll find it the same as them, but I'm okay going down that path, right? You can know what you're getting into and then you can decide, is that the right path for you?
Yeah.
So I think it's like all things, it's a very personal decision. And whether you go to law school, or whether you are a lawyer, is one that you just have to weigh with all that in mind. But beyond that, I think if you're in law school, right?
And thinking about your career path, like what advice would you give to someone who's kind of just kind of, you know, maybe if they're doing the traditional path, it's not as hard to make a decision. But if they're considering different paths, what advice would you give them?
Yeah. I think the number one thing I'll say is, like, regrets are usually coming from when you choose to follow the safe path, right? It's very easy to follow the safe path, and it caps your risk, but it caps your reward.
Mm-hmm.
So it leads to more middle of the road result. You'll be a lawyer, you'll be in a firm. You won't end up, you know, wondering, like, will my company be around in a year? You won't end up wondering, you know, can I make rent? But at the same time, you miss out on the upside of why people either go for startups or go for, whether it's advocacy organization or something that sort of, there's a reason why people go there, right? They're excited by the impact, they're excited by the mission.
Yeah.
And so it's, again, it's still a personal question for you, but it's one where you have to know, when you look back in 5 and 10 years, and you look back at this decision, are you focused on, do you want to make sure you have the most money and most financial security at that point? Or are you okay with the possibility that you may not have that, but you will have tried the path that you wanted to try? And you'll know, you know, was it for you or not. But there is that risk, right? It's something that people have to take. With that said, the thing I will say is most people do follow the normal path,
yes.
Right? And so whenever you're thinking about this, right, you're going to be thinking, you know, I'm doing something different than everybody else. Is it right? You know, should I just go do the normal path? And that thing I would say is definitely use your time in law school to explore that.
Yeah.
It's a really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do two things, network and make friends, and explore things in a way that you never would have before. Right. So on the exploring side, go think about what other career path am I interested in? And you can even try it, right? You can go take a summer or a non-summer. If you want to slack on classes. And
speaking from experience, right?
Yep, exactly. especially during 2-1-3.
You're not shy about that. Okay.
And go try something new. Go intern somewhere. Find a job where you can spend some time working on something that gives you a chance to try something you hadn't tried before.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, use that time to talk to people who you may not meet again once you leave law school, right? There's most law schools have guests who come in who have very interesting and unique backgrounds.
100%.
They have alumni who've gone down.
You've been at Columbia Law for lunch events.
Exactly.
That's how we met.
Yep. There you go. Go to lunch events.
And that's actually, so that's how we met, and we've been in touch ever since.
Yep. Lunch events.
Lunch events.
Free food. You know, you have opportunity to meet people that you won't. Once you leave law school, right, and you graduate and you go into the job grind,
yeah.
The years will blend in pretty quickly, especially like at a law firm, right? It's going to be a very quick, whether it's 1 year, 3 years, 5 years at the firm.
Yeah.
It's going to go quick, and there's not a lot of time to do extracurriculars, right? You're focused on the firm. You're working hard. And so if you're going to try to explore things, a lot of people say, let me do it once I leave law school.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder once you leave law school. You have a lot more responsibility. You have a lot more at stake. You have somebody who can actually assign deadlines to you and tell you, you got to be up till 12 or 1 doing that.
Yeah.
Use law school as a time to figure that out.
Yeah.
Or at least explore it as much as you can.
Yeah.
So even if you don't go down that path, you'll know why you didn't. You'll know what your decision making was. And you have already formed enough of you that if you decide to revisit it later, you can without having to figure out how to do that while working as a full-time lawyer.
One thing I wanted to ask you about is, what do you think your strengths are just generally, like as it applies to Evisor and what's helped you here? And then also, yeah, what do you think your strengths are as you view yourself?
I think it's something where like everybody in a early stage startup has to be a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
It means you have to be able to do 5-10 different things.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to focus on one thing. And the problems that you're solving today are very different, right? And so I wouldn't say necessarily that's my strength, but I think for all of us, right, if you're going to thrive in an environment where there's not a lot of structure, you pretty much have to be focused on just getting shit done, right? Like how do you get to the outcome you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
To some extent, you have to be relentless, right? You got to believe you're going to get there and nothing's going to stop you.
Yeah.
And you got to be hardworking.
Yeah.
And so those are almost table stakes for working in an environment like this. And as company grows, different pieces become useful in different ways or less necessary, or roles get more defined, obviously. But especially in an early stage, right? That it's important that every member of the team has that,
mm-hmm.
Along with being a good person to work with, because you're literally like sitting around the same table and there's no hiding from that person. If they're not somebody you want to be around, there's no choice, right? So you need to have really good folks and be somebody others want to work with as well in that environment, though I would say that applies, like you should want that no matter where you are. I think for early stage startup, it really is being comfortable with being that Swiss Army knife. and being comfortable with the uncertainty and the day-to-day change that comes with it, and the fact that you have to do things that you don't know how to do yet, and you have to figure it out, and you still have to get it done somehow, one way or another.
If Evisort hadn't worked out, what would you do? Like, you already graduated, and you decided on Evisort, and you're working on Evisort, and it didn't work out, what would you do?
Don't think about that. That's not an option.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's...
So once you committed, you're like, there's no way this is not going to work. We're going to be... But just the reality of startups is that they sometimes don't work out.
They don't.
And you just didn't think about that.
Still don't think about that, because that's not where...
If you have that mindset, then it could be distracting.
You can't have backups.
Right.
At some point, you have to commit, right?
Burn the ships.
So, exactly.
No plan B.
there's no plan B. We're lucky now that we're at the point where our product is actually used quite widely. And hopefully now the challenge has become more about how do you scale and how do you build out a good, sustainable company. The reality is, right, every startup is risky. It's not like I'm blind to that, or anybody here is blind to the fact that most startups, especially in the early stage, do not work out.
Yeah.
But as long as you're trying to hedge those bets and figure out how do you make it work and how do you make sure that if it fails, like, you have that other option. There's a lot of moments for every startup where it should fail. There's a lot of moments where we should have quit. We should not have kept going because there was a challenge that came up that was really tough that we should not be able to solve or should have been enough to convince us. And one day we'll write a book about those. But there's plenty of reasons why we should stop building our company. So as long as you have a fallback like that, your options every time you hit one of those is, do I go to fallback or do I overcome it? Versus the, you have to overcome it because there is no other option. And so for us, it's a mentality, but it's an important one to have when you're building a company and trying to make sure that you actually can get to the point where it's more about how do you grow instead of how do we not fail and shut down.
Yeah. Like you said, you're not at that point where that's really a concern, I would imagine. It's just that is usually towards more the early stages, but I was just curious how you thought about it. But it makes sense that you're basically, what you're saying is that you don't consider that option, because if you consider it, like, you're...
What I'll add is, or at the end of the day, it does just apply to startups, right? You could go down a career path where you are a non-lawyer, or even you are a lawyer, but in a nonprofit, and one day they say you no longer have a job, right?
Yeah.
But we're all investing in ourselves, right? Every time we make a decision about what we're doing in a career, we're taking a bet on two things. We're taking a bet on ourselves and the organization that we're joining. That we're betting on ourselves that we can rise up to whatever level that we're joining at. And we're taking a bet on the organization that they're the one they're gonna either grow with us or grow us to the point where we want to. So you have to have that view of yourself as an investment and have some confidence. And it's easier said than done. But at the end of the day, you know, if you join an opportunity and it doesn't work out, right, the same hustle that you used in that opportunity working day to day is what you should then be using to go decide, okay, what's my next opportunity going to be? What do I do next? And it may happen. And it's probably not a very fun couple of months or weeks when you go through that. But you have to take a bet on yourself sometimes. So I believe that when that time comes, I'll figure it out.
All right. I think we could wrap up there. Are there any other final thoughts that you have that you would want to share with the audience? I think you already gave a lot of advice, but if there's anything else that you are thinking about that you want to share, we're open to it too.
No, I mean, what I'll say is all advice is up to you to decide how to interpret it. So everybody has their own experiences. My experiences are what got me here and the path I came across, but everybody's is different.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they're listening to your channel, I'm sure they're listening to other folks talk.
Yeah.
So, you know, your job as listeners, right, take this in as one data point among many and use that to inform your decision. But there's going to be a lot of different views across the board, anything that we talked about, many that will disagree with me, and some of those will be right. So hopefully you just listen to what else is out there and use that to inform and make your own decision.
First of all, thank you again for doing this. It's really cool to be able to do an update after seeing you work in the Harvard Innovation Lab, and now you're here. And I think one of the reasons that I really wanted to do this interview with you even back then when we did the first one is just there's so many hurdles that other people would have used to be like, oh, I can't do this, or like using it as like it becomes part of your identity, like whether it was dropping out of high school or your pre-law counselor telling you that the highest you could do is a certain thing and you completely ignoring that, or when you were studying for the LSAT, we didn't mention this at the beginning.
So ignore the advice that isn't advice, is just a data point.
Yeah. But that a lot for a lot of people it's hard to hear because they already have a little bit of doubt, and then someone tells them you can't, and you're like, oh, well, I can't. especially if it's someone whose job it is to help you. But a lot of times those people have never applied for law school, so what are they?
Yep.
And yeah, we didn't really talk about this at the beginning of the interview, but in the last interview you talked about how you studied for the LSAT in 3 months and you were also working and also going to school full-time, taking 12 credits in the summer. And I think you were sleeping like 3 hours a night. And to still be able to like give your all to the LSAT at that point in your life. And you also were a bad writer, like all of these different things. I think people would take those and they would just, it would become such a big part of their identity that it would be hard for them to be like, I can do this and I could be a Harvard Law student. But as you said, a lot of your classmates, there were a lot who had done great in school all throughout. And there were a lot who had taken like a non-traditional path. And so I think one of the reasons that I love doing an interview like this is just I want people to see that there are so many different ways that you could get to where you want to go. Especially when you have a higher goal, there's just more ways to get there, right? And I appreciate you for sharing that so that other people could see that you worked through all of those challenges and you got here and you're still like climbing that mountain and getting higher and higher. And hopefully that's inspiring for others to see that you've done it.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. Well, thank you guys for joining. And thank you, Jake. And I'm super excited that we got to be here and do this interview at the offices. This is really cool to see.